Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host of Spiritual Hollywood, and I want to give kudos and credit and gratitude to BBS Radio and Don Newsom, Doug Newsom, and Seth Hendrick, who keep that ship running in tip-top condition and create a platform for all kinds of wonderful transformation across the globe. I have a wonderful guest this evening, and she's quite an amazing person, and she has an incredible background. And being this is BBS Radio, and if it's not mainstream, it'll be on BBS Radio, we're going to have a great conversation with Norma T. Hollis, who is an authenticity expert, and she is America's number one leading voice coach, authentic voice coach. And what she does is she helps people find their authentic voice. And what I'll do is just give you her website now, which is www.normahollis.com. I'll spell that. www.normahollis.com. And tonight's topic is 10 Steps to Authenticity. Now, Norma Hollis came into the world knowing that she had something important to do and to say, and no one understood her understanding. And the fact that she had a mission was reinforced after making a pact with her Baptist minister grandfather, who prayed over Norma's infected ear that had plagued her with traumatic pain for her entire childhood and healed it when 9 surgeries could not do it. Norma thought that she was doing her mission and, you know, living the life she was supposed to when she directed a Head Start program, but she was wrong about that. And the only, that was just a step along the way. From this, she learned human development. So as she thought she was supposed to do this and that, what she was actually doing is going to a sort of divinity school that led her to be who she is today. And she thought that she had found her mission when she opened the Speakers Bureau and a training company, and again she was wrong, and that was just another part of the preparation which taught her the industry of speaking. All of this time, she was in a kind of a trance, writing about what she was learning on her challenging journey through life and her ear infection and her earaches and her supernatural relationships and mystical medical and this and that, and she felt that she was like a puppet being manipulated by forces that she was unable to control while information was being channeled through her, and she walked in great faith because I'm sure that was a very confusing time. And now she has integrated her early childhood experiences with the 13 years of the professional speaking industry with the outcome of her trances, which she defines as 30 years of authenticity training to become America's leading authentic voice doctor. And again, her website is normahollis.com. And without further ado, I'd like to bring on Norma to tell you about her remarkable life and what she's doing today. Hello, Norma.
Hi, Katie, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thanks for making time. I know you're a very busy person, and you just did finish up a very inspiring call with a protege of yours. So I really appreciate that you're on the air with me now. And I'm delighted to know that you're on the planet and in our world and doing what you're doing. And your background is just amazing to me. And I want you to know that BBS Radio is an excellent platform to talk about exactly what happened in your childhood that inspired you and ignited your passion to be the dynamic woman you are today. So if you wouldn't mind just sharing a bit of the things I didn't say with our listeners, that would be great.
Well, how deep do you want me to go, Katie? You know,
deep as you can go. You got 55 minutes.
I got 55 minutes, yeah. Well, first of all, I would like to acknowledge that it's great knowing you, Katie, and what you're doing and providing a platform for people like me who are a little less than typical, a little different than typical in this world. I just had a great conversation today with someone you referred me to who is going to be publishing my autobiography.
Mm.
And having a cushion, if you will, a network of people who are of like minds, who don't think that the kind of experiences that I've had are weird, is a great blessing, because it's really challenging to be the only one in your circle who has the kind of experiences that you do, and no one can really acknowledge them. And that's where I have found myself most of my life. And I know I'm not the only one who is less than typical and has highly supernatural experiences, and people around them don't quite understand that.
Mm-hmm.
When you talked about me being in a family that did not understand me, that is so true. I remember very clearly at the age of 2 when was my first memories on this planet. I have memories of before being on this planet as
mm-hmm.
well, but my first memory on this planet was at the age of 2 when I got really frustrated. When it was a point in life when I, early in my life, when I realized that, you know, I'm out here on my own because these people do not understand me. And it's interesting that both of my parents tell stories, memorable stories to them, significant at the age of 2. And I can only surmise that all of these occurred at the same time. So my father tells a story of how he was trying to tell me my name, and he was telling me, your name is Norma. And he would say to me, what's your name? And invariably I would say, my. And he would say, no, not my name, what's your name, and your name is Norma. And we would go through this banter back and forth, and I guess he just thought I was not intelligent enough to understand what my name was. And I thought, what is this man trying to tell me? Because my name is my, and I'm here for a purpose, and I'm supposed to tell you my purpose, and how can I tell you my purpose if you don't even believe what my name is? And so it started off a very frustrating time in my life and a realization that, you know, these people don't have a clue of what I'm here for, what I'm to do, and therefore how to help me. Now, my mother tells a story about the same time frame, and as an African-American woman and as children as African-American, we are born with hair that has the texture of many Caucasians, so it's very straight and silky,
mm-hmm.
and it's unusual for it to stay that way.
Right.
And my mother, most African-American mothers are hopeful that their girls' hair will stay silky because it means hours of relief from having to try to do their hair and comb it and press it and all the things that they do or did to your hair, you know, when we were young.
Mm-hmm.
And so my hair stayed like that for 2 years. And she tells a story that overnight my hair changed. And she said she cried for 2 days. But in any event, I equate these three memories as the same experience. My frustration because of not being understood, my father thinking I didn't understand what my name was, and my mother saying that my hair had changed. And so that was just the first memory that I have of a lifelong a collection of memories that are very mystical, very supernatural, very unusual, very atypical, but very much a part of my life.
Wow. So, You had some encounters in past lives with Egypt, didn't you?
Yes, I trace my life, the journey of my soul back to ancient Egypt. I have very distinct memories of being on the planet as a male in ancient Egyptian days. And my job at that time, I was a mathematician. And my job was to create the sacred geometry patterns of labyrinths of that day and age.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's very clear. I see myself. I was had on a cap, and I was I'm sketching, and I'm on a cement block, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Part of a group, and my job is doing the mathematical portion of it. And that's the first. I won't say it's my first soul's memory, but that's the first one of this string, if you will. There's a string of memories that I have
mm-hmm.
that transcend from ancient Egypt through the 1700s, 1800s, through now.
Mm-hmm.
I have memories of several lifetimes. One, I was an Italian, a pretty blonde Italian woman with pigtails on each side of my head.
Mm-hmm.
A very large bosom and very, very happy and smile all the time. And I died very suddenly in a barn when something hit my chest or something. I don't know exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I have memories of being a black man in the 1700s, 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And my memory starts with my head being submerged in some water and being pulled out of the water and being admonished. I was afraid I was going to be lynched, but I was not. I was admonished instead to no longer help my people with money. Because, yes, I had something to do with, I don't know, I was more like a banker, if you will.
Right.
And I helped people with money somehow. And I was told no longer to help them. I have another memory of being a healer. I have memories of people bringing their children to me. And I don't know if I was, I wasn't a medical doctor in the true sense of medical doctor. I was more like maybe a medical intuitive or an herbalist or something.
Uh-huh.
And I would be helping families with their children. So I guess I was like a pediatrician.
And right.
this was as a male also. So mm-hmm. these are just some of the memories that I have. And what's so interesting about them, in the last past life regeneration that I had,
mm-hmm.
the person that did it for me made the comment that I was something about labyrinth. I don't remember exactly what it was. Somebody said about labyrinth, and it was such an eye-opening because in this lifetime, I am drawn to labyrinth. I have designed labyrinths in this lifetime.
Right.
I remember about 30 years ago when I was living in Detroit, I was attracted to a necklace. It was an unusual necklace that was very round, and it was something about the roundness. And if you look if you put this necklace next to a labyrinth pattern, they look almost the same, although it's not a labyrinth pattern. But something about that necklace, I had to buy it, and I had to hold it. I still have it because it was something about it. I knew it. I'd understand later. And sure enough, you know, 20 years later, I met the labyrinth in its current form, or at least which is the Middle Ages 11th Circuit labyrinth pattern. And all of this started flooding back, and memories started being reminded of the memories that I've had over the course of decades. And so where I'm at now is that my life's message is for people to understand that our journey through life is more than a journey through this planet. It's our purpose. When we talk about purpose, which we talk about so much, it's more than just the purpose for which you were born in this lifetime to achieve. It's the purpose that your soul was birthed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a purpose that continues through many, many lifetimes. The purpose never changes. It only evolves as we evolve, as the planet evolves, and as God evolves. And I've also learned that there are people in our lives who come in our lives repeatedly to help us and to be a part of this process. And we all share a piece of the responsibility of whatever it is that's our mission. I have three people in my life now who have been in my life many, many, many times. My mother was one. She just passed this past November. And I saw her at my bedside at my death at one of my previous lifetimes. And the other are two very, very, very good friends who the three of us incarnate repeatedly together. And we just have it going on like that. So,
yeah, I believe that we we incarnate in soul groups, and
yes,
that through every lifetime we reconnect with each other again, and we have a knowing about that.
Yes.
When I listened to the audiobook, Many Lives, Many Masters, I had such a knowing of truth about that I cried, and I've heard it like 20 times, the audiobook. And every time I listen to it, I'm comforted because it reminds us that everything comes when it comes, and you can't force or rush anything that's meant to be. That
right.
there is, and as you said, there's a purpose throughout your soul's journey, not just throughout one lifetime.
Right.
And the purpose evolves and expands throughout the lifetimes according to the path you get on. And I also know that, and I'm sure you know this too, Norma, is that there are some teachers who appear to be teachers who are really students, and they can lead a person down a path that takes them off their own path.
Yeah.
And it takes something of a, some kind of an event to get them back on their path again and away from the person who's actually a student posing as a teacher. I happen to know that you are a teacher, and, you know, I can't shake the notion that your earaches happened so that you would pay attention to the voices you were hearing.
Oh, that's absolutely positively correct, and it's been reinforced in many, many times. The ear is the listening, and my ear was to make me more attentive, without a doubt, without
right.
a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Right, and, you know, I'm very curious to know what it was that your grandfather spoke over your ear, if you remember, because I sense that there's a lot of healing power in those words, mm-hmm. and not just for you, but for everyone else who would hear them, because, you know, he was able to bring you comfort when medical doctors could not.
Right.
So there's really something supernatural about what it was he said and the intention that he used when he said it. And you heard it acutely to the point where it reached every fiber of your being to your very core and caused you to follow, like you said in your bio, like as if you were a puppet. Just
yeah.
being manipulated by a puppeteer, because you heard what to do and you followed direction. You took your orders from the divine. You didn't question it. You took leaps of faith when nobody understood why you were doing it or what you were doing, including yourself.
Hello.
And it brought you to where you are now. And, you know, to be someone who's able to take, I bet you could take the most egomaniacal person and introduce them to their authentic voice in a matter of minutes if they were willing to hold still long enough and let you do that.
And I've done it before. You're absolutely right. I do have that gift, and I've done it before. Now, whether or not they would listen or not is a whole other story, but I certainly helped them introduce themselves. And it's so interesting because on my call that I just had before we had our call, one of my proteges, the very thing you're talking about, she's being tossed and turned right now, and we had that same conversation with her, so it's just interesting and how timely, you know, that is. And it's also interesting that you're asking me the same question that the person you referred me to, Tony, asked me today also, and that is, what is it that your grandfather said to you when he prayed over your ear?
Right.
And so I appreciate both of your feedback as of that being an important message. Now, first of all, let me say this, that since I have memories of before birth, number one, and
mm-hmm.
since I have memories of the age of two being frustrated by my father, particularly not understanding who I was, when my ear started hurting at the age of nine in my grandfather's presence, and when my mother said, call Papa, which is called Grandpa, that immediately at a very deep level in me said, hey, maybe there is somebody here who understands. Because, of course, I knew that Papa was a preacher,
right.
a minister, and therefore had the God connection. And since what I came with was a God connection that nobody in my life so far had been able to connect me to, on one level already my pain has stopped because it had my attention that somebody finally connects with what I'm all about.
Right, right.
So what my grandfather said to me, what I remember that he said, is that he said, God must have something very important for you to do to give you so much pain at a young age.
Wow.
And then he asked me, are you willing to do what it is that God wants you to do? Will you give your life to God? And at 9 years old, I had enough wisdom to understand that you get choices in life and that there's a chance here for a happy life out there. So I asked my grandfather if I could ask something of God. Could I ask to have the training for what I'm supposed to do before I'm 30 years old? And he said that he was sure that God would grant that for me. And then he asked me to, I had to turn over to put the correct ear up because I couldn't hear out of the ear too much. So I had the painful ear to the pillow. But what's interesting is that all the time we're talking, I'm not crying and wailing out of pain. I'm more wrapped in curiosity about what my grandfather is saying. And then from there forward, he prayed. I have no idea what he said because I went to sleep.
Right.
But what's so phenomenal about my life and living out the 30-year and the pact that my grandfather and I made is that at the age of 21 or so, I had surgery on my ear. So I had a hole in my eardrum, and it was in a location in my ear that the surgery could not be done because it was in a difficult location. And by the time I was 21, technology had advanced enough that they were willing to try the surgery. So they tried the surgery, and the surgery would not take. It did not heal the eardrum, did not stop the hole in the eardrum. So my doctor was very, very curious and involved in my ear and very concerned that it didn't take, and then continued to work on my ear for years, and then had surgery again at the age of 29. And at this time, or 28 rather, at this time, again, it did not take. And so the doctor says to me, he says, Norma, your ear is mystical. I said, yeah, hello. I said, okay, Dr. Strong, what does that mean, my ear is mystical? He said, it means that there is no medical reason why your ear will not heal. So I was 28 then, so I'm 29 the next year. My ear has been open now since I'm 8 years old, never has closed, surgery won't take, will not close on its own. I go to his office, it's October of my, I'm 29 years old, I'm leaving for California, moving from Detroit, I'll be 30 in December.
Mm-hmm.
I go to his office, he rolls around in his chair and does a lot of ums and curiosity. He says to me, your ear is healed.
Wow.
No hole in your eardrum, and it's right before my 30th birthday.
Oh, very interesting.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, my whole life is like that. Just one after another experiences, mystical, supernatural things happening
right.
that have no medical or logical explanation, but are a part of my life experience, absolutely.
Which ear is it?
It is my right ear.
Ah, okay.
Yes. And to this day, I cannot get water in it. Now, when you said it was healed, that's all in good. The time I got to California, it's no longer healed again. So it healed, it completely closed up 1 year when I was about 35.
Mm-hmm.
I swam almost every day that year, and then it has been open again since then. I go to the doctor sometimes, and they can't tell is it open or not, and they have put me some. I've been on a bed or something where they have to get a microscope and look to see if the ear is closed, because the issue with it being open is I cannot get even a drop of water in it, otherwise I'll have an ear infection.
Right, right. And antibiotics are not good for your body, and you can only have so many of them in your life.
Well, I spent four decades taking antibiotics. I did not know that. You know, my dad was a dentist, and so he believed everything that medical books told him.
Right.
And when they told him that antibiotics is what would cure my ear, he believed it hook, line, and sinker, and I believed my dad, and so I
right.
took them for 10 days, as they said, and I would get infections 2 and 3 times a year. And
right.
so having a hole in my body in a place where you're not supposed to have a hole
right.
really challenged my immune system. And after 40 years, I had a really terrible case of Candida albicans, which is what
yeah.
they get as yeast infections,
right.
and I had throughout my entire body. So it has been challenging, and that's created a whole other level of mystical experiences and things happening. It just continues throughout my life.
Well, you know, Norma, I met you in person, and your energy is like you radiate.
Thank you.
You know how when somebody's wearing bright tangerine or bright orange and they give off this kind of light around them when they're wearing that color?
Oh, funny you should mention orange. That's my color, yes. Okay.
That's our color, too. And
that's right. It sure is.
Yeah, and you weren't wearing that color when I met you, but it kept seeming like you were because your energy is just amazing, and you couldn't tell that you've suffered so much with your ear or antibiotics or any of that. And also, I will confide something else in you. Since I met you, I have had an issue with my left ear, and I've never had an issue with my ear before. It feels like every now and then I'll just be talking, and it feels like there's a big square bucket on it, and it's nothing but echo when I speak, and when I sneeze or hiccup, it feels like air is coming out of my ear. So I can't stop thinking about you because my ear has this thing that it's doing. So what I make of that is that you and I are supposed to know one another, and that I so was drawn into your story and your history being an intuitive empath. I took on what you went through to some degree, and I'm doing a lot more listening now than I did before I had this strange thing going on with my ear. So I just made that connection during this interview. So that's very intriguing to me, another mystical, supernatural thing.
I love it, and that's a good way to read it, because I do believe that we are well connected and intended to do great things together, absolutely.
Sure, and I was also born in Detroit like you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a small world.
Born at Herman Kiefer Hospital.
I think that's when I was born into Herman Kiefer. I think so.
You serious?
Yeah, I think so.
That's so funny. And the thing is that I recently learned from Tony Holm, the person you spoke with today at WordKeepers, that Detroit was one of the richest cities and surrounding areas for, I believe it was copper, and that people who were born in Detroit are born in an altered state of consciousness based on the natural elements that are indigenous of Detroit. So
Tony told you that. You mentioned that to me before, and I was so glad to hear that because I recognize that myself. You've got Stevie Wonder. You've got Aretha Franklin.
Yeah, Motown.
Diana Ross, you know.
Yep, all the car companies there.
Yes.
And Tony is the one who told us, so you might want to ask her about that.
I certainly will. I was very impressed with Tony. I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with her today. Thank you so much.
She's a very evolved being.
Yes,
and
she
you
is.
Said something that intrigued me. You said the expansion of God as God expands. That was like mind candy to me when you said it. And what occurred to me when you said it is that, you know, our perception of God is constantly evolving and expanding and changing and shifting. And as we approach 2012, I believe that because of all of the Mayan history and stories and expectations around 2012, that people are like jumping on the consciousness bandwagon as not to be left behind and are more and more intrigued by what might happen then. What's your instinct about that, Norma?
Well, one thing that I find very intriguing for me personally is that the date they give on 2012 is my birthday. I've heard December 20th, I've heard December 21st. And my birthday is December 21st, so that's what I've heard most recently. So I've heard a couple of stories about 2012. Some say the world's going to come to an end because the calendar ends. But I think more likely that that the shifting in our consciousness is going to become more natural, more less wooey-wooey. It's the word I use is wooey-wooey a lot because people that are very traditional see our way of looking at the world as wooey-wooey.
Yeah, we were heretics back in the day, you know, in our other lifetimes.
In some cases, we're heretics now in some sort.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
And in corporate America, we can occur that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a darn shame because it is a more evolved way of looking, and it's a more inclusive way of looking at life. And
inclusive is absolutely the best word you could use.
Yes, yes. So I think that the powers that have been the patriarchal society that we have had that has focused on one way of looking at the world, and if you don't see the world the way we see the world, then something's wrong with you, that there's going to be more acceptance, more realization that, you know, there are, just like the many different colors of people in the world, many different ways to live one's life in the world and still give to the world and be, you know, satisfying and what have you. So I think there will be a lot of people who, out of fear, do a lot of stupid things in preparation as more and more becomes known, and fear is putting people's minds about 2012. But I choose to look at it from the evolutionary expanding. I mean, if you look at just our sense of the world, since they thought the world was flat, to now the time that they know that there's many galaxies out there, I mean, how much expansion is that, and how much do we not know? There's so much that we haven't got a clue of what's going on. I think I read something today that I read. So if you're looking, like I'm sitting in my office right now, and I'm looking at my bookshelf where I have, maybe a couple hundred books sitting on my shelf.
Uh-huh.
And I can look at those books, and I can say, wow, that's a lot of knowledge, you know? So we can do the same thing with God. And if you look at God as being all those books and more, there's so much that we don't know. And even if we read all of it, we still wouldn't know everything.
Right.
So, you know, the expansion of God and what's possible and the things that we don't know are just absolutely phenomenal.
And it's so exciting. And it's such an exciting time to be alive where we can have conversations like this globally you know, on a radio show, and that there are people who are hungry for this information. And, you know, the way that this radio show came about for me was divine providence. I didn't go looking for it. It came and got me. And, you know, by the time someone said I was the most fearless speaker they'd ever heard and I need my own radio show, the following Tuesday, I was on the air with Spiritual Hollywood. I didn't argue, and I didn't say, I don't know nothing about birth and no radio show. I did it. And I've been doing it for 3 years every Tuesday ever since. And, you know, it's a platform to talk about these things that people are hungry for. And I believe our audience lives inside of us. And as a speaker, you must sense that yourself, too, don't you?
That our audience is inside of ourselves?
Our audience is inside of us.
That's
urging us to say the things that we're saying.
I've never heard it quite said that way, but I definitely know that there are voices that live inside of us. I hadn't thought of it as our audience. I think of it more as our guide, but our guide is our audience as well. But
yes.
Absolutely living inside of us, and it's up to us. You know, as someone who has worked with speakers for the last 13 years, and one of the ways I got to coin my work as authenticity is because I began to recognize that as I was watching speakers and coaching speakers, the ones who I came across who were the most effective, the most powerful speakers were the ones who were fearless on stage, that were clear of their message, and they knew who they were.
And they were connected to
really
the heart.
The authenticity piece. Yeah.
Yes, and their heart felt. They spoke with heartfelt passion.
Yes, absolutely. That makes
like
all the difference in the world. Yes.
Yes, and you are compared to Tony Robbins more often than not, aren't you?
Yeah, I could compare it to Tony Robbins and Maya Angelou. So somewhere between those, I get in a month from May to June, three people refer to me as Tony Robbins. And Maya Angelou I hear a lot, especially in my own community with black women that I come encounter with. I hear that a lot. So,
wonderful. Well, that's not a bad thing at all.
I'm not complaining.
Absolutely. And Omarosa, the president and CEO of Omarosa.com was on the television show,
The Apprentice.
I can't think
of it.
The Apprentice, yes. And you coached her. And
she wrote
an amazing testimonial about you that, you know, I read all about you. I read your book over the weekend, and I'm fascinated by your story. And when I read her testimonial, I really got your gift. I really got what you're able to do, and what you're able to do is introduce people to who they really are, which is their authentic voice, and then all the nonsense falls away, and they become the person they were born to be. And that transformation happens in an instant, and you're able to facilitate that like a midwife. And, you know, in her testimonial, I was just, you know, so impressed by what she had to say.
Mm-hmm.
How did you meet her?
Well, she was referred to me by another speaker in the Washington, D.C. area, and she came to me when she had been fired from The Apprentice, but before the public knew she had been fired. And so what I did with her is help her to take her 15 minutes of fame and turn it into a professional speaking career. So she's doing extremely well as a speaker. She's kind of gone a little beyond what I've coached her because, I mean, I would like to sit down with her now by the new book she has out, which I think it has a very interesting title with the B word in there somewhere. And so she's kind of gone beyond a level of authenticity that I'm familiar with, but I did definitely get her started in recognizing who she was, who she could be, and how to make that happen and come from her true core. Now, she did for a couple of years when she got off, she did definitely made the effort to be her authentic self and let the genuine feminine female on her, you know, come out. I do think that along the way, some of the PR people that have gotten to her have convinced her that the other side is more lucrative, and I think that's the side that she's chosen to go with. But,
no, and, you know, being in the entertainment industry, I'm also a talent manager in one of my other day jobs, and, you know, I'm – one of the ways that I determine if someone is a suitable client for my company, which is Guardian Angel, is their authenticity or lack of it. I can spot it. I can spot authenticity, and I can spot it when it's not, when a person doesn't have it. Authenticity is not something you can turn on and off.
That's
something
right.
That's with you constantly. It walks in the room before you do.
Right.
And you know, with me, somebody can be so talented that they can win an Oscar, you know, in the one and only project they ever do. But if they're not an authentic person, I will not work with them because they're not coachable and they're not willing, usually, in my experience. And authenticity is absolutely key in the casting process, being this is spiritual Hollywood. You know, what would you say to the actors out there, Norma, which, you know, most of our listeners are entertainment industry affiliated, the writers, the directors, the producers, in all areas of the entertainment industry, how important is authenticity? Well, in general, we know that you know that. And how could the people in this industry apply it to their own lives? And what could they get from you if they were to seek you out for coaching?
Yeah, I do a lot of coaching and help people to connect more with their authentic core. And it would be my guess that unless an actor or actress is really strong in their self-knowledge of knowing who they are and being their authentic self, that it would be very easy to get caught up in several things. One, caught up in confusion in terms of who am I really amongst all the roles that I'm playing. Caught up in confusion in believing all the press for a successful actor or actress whose press speaks very highly of them, and then you begin to believe the press. There's so many people I've met along the way who are not as visible as some actors and actresses are, but who might be professional speakers and be visible from that standpoint. And so many of them, I would say 85-90% of them, if not more, end up believing all the press is written about them, end up changing their personality, end up being somewhat arrogant, begin to lose respect for the people who are their audience, and lose, as a result, their own level of authenticity. So I imagine that maintaining authenticity in an environment of a high level of exposure is a real challenge. So what I can do with people is help them to identify what their core is. You know, we didn't talk about the 10 steps to authenticity, but one of them is integrity. And by integrity, I refer to knowing what your values are. When you know what your values are, then it's easy to make decisions no matter what's coming at you. Because whatever comes at you, you go back to your value system, and your answer is based on whether or not it coincides with your values. But if you don't know what your values are, or if your values are something that are artificial and that are strictly from the Hollywood scene, then it's easy to get tripped up and to never really fall into your authentic self. So one of the first things that I would do with persons who may be confused because they're actors and actresses and caught up in all that is help them to identify what their own personal values are and then help them to create boundaries based on those values so it gives them the framework under which to live their lives.
That makes perfect sense. And I could see where you could almost call yourself, in that regard, a success management coach.
Okay, I'll go with that. I'm a great diagnostician. That's one of my great skills. So when someone comes to me and they spend an hour in my coaching session, the first hour I'm diagnosing. I want to know who they've been, who they are, who they want to be. And then I want to talk to them. And what I get from people invariably is in the first 10 or 20 minutes, I've answered more questions than they came asking. So I have a great intuitive gift that allows me to dig deep within them and have soul-to-soul conversation, if you will, to get to something that really might have been plaguing them and tugging at them at a deep level. And they may not even be aware of the question. It's so often that I'm with people and I do that kind of deep diagnostic work. And I bring them to tears because it's something they've been struggling with that they had forgotten they're struggling with, and then they get answers for it, you know, before we finish. So
right.
This is the kind of thing that I can help people with to reconnect with who it is they're supposed to be and then help them tweak their path so that they're back on in alignment with the path that they're supposed to be on. They're back on their authentic path.
Right. And I believe, too, that we are able to go back and rewrite our past. To the degree that we start with a blank canvas, rewrite our past, you still keep the things in there that gave you wisdom, and it's like there's a phrase that memory without emotion equals wisdom. Mm-hmm. So if you take the emotion out of the memory, you're left with the wisdom of it, and mm-hmm. you can rewrite your past and as you're talking to these people in that hour you're with them and you dig deep and your intuitive knowing shows you where their wound is that they forgot they had, you bring that to the surface and they see it, they come to terms with it, they're able to accept it, and in that acceptance comes a new authenticity. Is that correct?
That's very true. And then and they can move on.
Right. So they're not dragging that around with them like a big piece of rotting flesh.
Right, because we get stuck. When we have emotional traumas, we get stuck from that trauma.
Sure.
And I was going to have to move in. So, yes, I help them unstick and get beyond that. That's very well said. Thank you.
Yeah, and there's Peter Levine does a wonderful work. He's Taming the Tiger, I believe, is the name of his book, and it's about trauma. He said that animals are born and have an innate knowing about how to process trauma, whereas humans weren't born with that ability. And what animals do, let's say a gazelle is chased by a tiger and it just barely escapes the tiger. And when it finally realizes it's safe, what it does then is it shakes absolutely chronically until the trauma has left their body and not stuck in their tissues anymore. So the term shake it off comes from that. Mm-hmm. And animals know how to shake it off, but humans don't know how to shake it off. And when you really come to an understanding about what trauma is and how it gets stuck in your body, then you're able to deal with it a lot better. And a lot of people get triggered into trauma and they don't even know that they have been. And, you know, a really good friend is somebody who will notice that you've been triggered and help bring you back to the now again by saying, you know, what's your name? What year is this? What time is it? What day is it? To get you back in the present moment again, they'll notice that you've been triggered because you've kind of left. And, you know, I'm sure that with all the ear pain that you've had, that there are memories from that that might trigger you and cause you to feel anxious at times. And then you regroup by remembering and recognizing that that's where it's coming from. Does that ever happen with you, Norma?
Because well, on several levels, you know, for one, for many years, I had forgotten all about the ear trauma. And let me just, we didn't mention this, but the trauma for my ear came not just from the earaches, but also because the antibiotics would not work, and they had to put a topical solution on my eardrum, and it felt like acid in the middle of my head and my ear. And then I had to go back and have that done repeatedly for the next few months.
Wow.
And that was before the earaches started. So I had about a good year or so of this very, very traumatic pain in my ear that actually changed my life. I went from a very carefree, happy-go-lucky child to a very introverted, introspective, confused, you know, still very loving and all, but very confused, like, why is this pain happening to me, and what is God doing, and this is something that was for my good to help me, and so
right.
Naturally that left certain, you know, certain feelings and thoughts unspoken and unknown as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old child.
And so, look how strong it made you.
Oh, God, yes, that's one thing people ask me, how did you get so strong? Well, you know,
suffering.
You're at the age of 8, okay?
Right. I'm going to give your website again, Norma. It's normaholis.com, normaholis.com. And I was noticing as you were speaking about your Egyptian roots and past lives that you were a mathematician back there and that you had an interest in labyrinth-type things, and today you're a labyrinth specialist. So it seems to be really deeply rooted in you, the labyrinth. So would you let our listeners know, because a lot of people don't know what a labyrinth is. We actually have a pillow that our puppies sleep on that's a labyrinth, and they just love it. They pulled each other around on it. And I've walked a labyrinth many times, and by the time I got to the middle of it, I was carrying a heavy load of emotion, concern, and worry, and fear as a single mom. By the time I got to the middle of the labyrinth, I had so much levity that I just couldn't stop giggling.
Wonderful.
And it's like, you know, I just let it all go along the way, and it was a process that was an intuitive process for me. Nobody can tell you how to walk the labyrinth. It's a very personal thing. Mm-hmm. And the way I walked it was just like taking off bits, like hundreds of thousands of Post-it notes that had an inner critic, you know, telling me that you're not a very good mother, you could do better, you're this, you're that, and all these voices. And each post-it, I just metaphorically took off myself on my way to the middle of the labyrinth. And by the time I got there, there weren't any more post-its on me.
Well,
and
what a wonderful way to walk it. That's great. I like that analogy.
It was really wonderful. And I came out of that restored, rebooted, like a computer that gone haywire, and you just turn it off and leave it off for a minute and then turn it back on, and it's back to its factory settings.
Right.
So it was really a wonderful experience for me. And what is it that you hope that your clients will gain from walking a labyrinth as a labyrinth coach?
Well, a labyrinth is another means, it's a tool for helping people connect more to their authenticity.
Uh-huh.
And the authenticity that this helps you connect with is on a couple of levels. One, it helps you connect more authentically with your God connection. It's always been there, but sometimes we get separated from it or removed from it somewhat, so it helps to connect that. And then secondly, it helps to connect you with your own inner voice, your own inner message, your own inner guide, your own authenticity. So
mm-hmm.
Now labyrinths go back. My research takes places in back to ancient Egypt, about 2500 B.C., because there were labyrinths that were around the pyramids. And at that time, they were walled events, and they were like square. So you would dress in all white. You would be sprinkled to purify you before you enter the labyrinth. And every time you made a turn, because you would make several turns before you get to the entrance of the labyrinth, you're walking around the outside of the pyramid. Every
mm-hmm.
time you made a turn, I think it was 12 turns altogether, you would meditate on a different concept, like love, like peace, like overstanding, not understanding, but standing over knowledge rather than under knowledge.
Hmm.
And then you would walk in the labyrinth, and by the time you got to the pyramid, you would be purified to walk into the pyramid and the king's chambers and what have you. So in the Middle Ages, when the pilgrims could not make their passage, they created a floor-type labyrinth, which is the one that's popular now. The one that's popular now is what they call an 11-circuit labyrinth. Now, many people, when you say the word labyrinth, they think of a maze, and a labyrinth is actually the opposite of a maze. A maze gives you a confusing path, and every step you go in, you don't know necessarily if the turn that you make will lead you out to the center, confuse you, lead to a dead end, or just what.
Right.
Sometimes a lot like life. But mm-hmm. a labyrinth is like one long path that is twisted and spiraled, that if you just follow the path, putting one foot in front of the other, it will lead you to the center. When you go into the labyrinth, we ask people, take off your shoes, don't take any burdens, any purses, or anything else with you. Be free and allow yourself to listen to the voices that come to you. You can go into the labyrinth taking your concerns or a question you're dealing with, or you can just be free to listen to the words of spirit. And as you're walking the labyrinth and taking these spiraling turns, some paths that you're on are very short, and maybe you can get through them in five paces. And some paths are very long and may take you about 50 paces to get through, and that's, again, just like life. The labyrinth is referred to as a metaphor for your journey through life, and how you walk a labyrinth is oftentimes how you walk life. For example,
mm-hmm.
some people cross over a line, and they end up coming out rather than going to the center. And then sometimes in their lives, they have trouble finishing something because they're crossing lines, going for shortcuts, being impatient, or just not focusing and paying attention. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
people will wonder, the person in front of me is walking too slow, and they get upset because they don't realize that you can just walk around them.
That's road rage.
Sometimes Robbie goes around. And so as you walk the path, eventually you get to the center, and the center is said to be the sacred area where you are in union with God. You stop there, you meditate, you pray, do what you feel like doing, as long as you feel like doing, and then you follow the same path back out.
Right.
And then it's said that as you walk out, your spirit and the spirit of God are connecting in a sense that giving you answers for any questions that you may have walked in with. And then as you get the answers, you can begin to move forward with your life.
And that's exactly what I experienced. I could not stop laughing when I got to the middle because the levity, you know, there's a saying, angels can fly because they take themselves lightly.
Yes.
By the time I got to the middle, I took myself so lightly that I was just giggling. and it was the most delightful childlike sensation. You know, because when we're children and we pray, we talking to God, and God's talking to us. You know, it's like when you pray, it's you talking to God, and when you hear your intuition, it's God talking back to you. And as children, because you're closer to the source you came from, and you don't have all the encumbrances that a full life puts on you, you have that connection more strongly. And I know for me personally, to get to the center of the labyrinth, the one time I walked it, that's exactly what it felt like for me. And it felt like I just had put down my adult burdens and went back to my childhood of carefree feeling. And it was just delightful.
They call the labyrinth the womb of God. So it rebirths you when you walk it. So that's exactly what you're experiencing, a giggling rebirth. That's a wonderful thing.
Right. That's beautiful. Wow. Yeah. You know, I never shared this with anyone before.
Oh,
about the labyrinth.
Yeah.
It's something personal I did. You know, if I'm talking to a specialist on labyrinths, it's the perfect time to discuss it.
Yes,
so,
it is.
Norma, before we go, and we're coming up on the end of our Spiritual Hollywood Hour, I would like for you to name for our listeners, if you would, the 10 steps to authenticity and whatever, you know, you would like to say about each step along the way. We have, I think, 4 more minutes.
Okay, well, the 10 Steps to Authenticity is the title of my book, which they can get on my website or at Amazon.com.
It's a wonderful read. You can read it in an hour.
Yeah, it's easy to read, and it has my test. I have an assessment that I've designed that allows a person to determine how authentically they're living their lives. And it evaluates you in the 9 dimensions of authenticity and tells you about step 10. So step 1 is become closer to your intuitive nature. Listen to your voice that lives within. Be intuitive, and I have 8 steps that will assist you to become more intuitive. Step number 2 is your integrity. Get to know what your values are and live by your values. And step number 3 is inspiration. Be more inspired than motivated, because no matter what you do, it requires you to move from the inside out in order to get things done. So those first 3 have to do with your inner voice, your inner self. Listen to your inner voice, intuition, integrity, and inspiration. The next 3 have to do with your outer voice, and that's the voice that that you present to the public, that people see. The inner voice nobody sees but you. It's your personal GPS system. But the outer voice, the next 3 steps, are how people perceive when they see you. So step number 4 is your net wellness. How well do you look? How are you taking care of yourself? What's your appearance? What do people think when they see you? Step number 5 is your network. The people who are around you, your quality relationships and your quantity relationships. And step 6 would be your net wealth, and that's not just money, but it's what brings you joy and abundance in life. So those 3 net wellness, network, net wealth are how other people see the net you when you appear in front of people. They get a feeling and an impression about how healthy you are, who you're surrounding yourself with, and what you identify as your joy and abundance. And then the next 3 have to do with your expressive voice, how you express yourself in the world. And they're the 3 L's, legacy, likability, and lifestyle. Legacy has to do with your gifts and talents, the ones that were given to you at the time of your birth, and what you've done with them as you have been on this planet. What legacy are you leaving when you go behind? Gifts and talents, legacy. The next one is likability, which is your personality. It's always better to be a person who is liked than disliked. For someone who wants to be authentic, what's your authentic personality and how are you expressing your best self to the world? Mm-hmm. And then the last one is lifestyle, what you do on a day-to-day basis, what are your habits and how can you tweak them so that the real authentic you comes out? And then step number 10 is taking all 9 of those dimensions and aligning them so that they're integrated in your life and working synergistically to put forth one person whose inner voice, what's fed in the inside, is the same and is aligned with the person that you show to the outside, your outer voice, and that's expressed in how you express yourself to the world. And when you have all of those components integrated and giving the same message, you are truly authentic.
Yep, and that makes for better actors, better writers, better directors, better producers, better people, better moms, better employees, better speakers, better everything. And
better all of that.
All of that. And, you know, I believe we were born purely authentic and that little bits and pieces got traded here and there, and it never goes away. It's always in you. It just gets buried underneath things. And what I believe your specialty is, Norma, is to pull all that gunk off a person and reintroduce them to themselves. And what a beautiful, beautiful legacy you're leaving. And I want to thank you for taking all of your wisdom, gifts, and talents from all of your past lives and bringing them into this one and making the contributions that you are in our world. And, you know, I am excited for every person who gets to know you, gets to meet you, gets to experience your work and your gifts and your talents. And I am excited for what's to come for you because I believe you're just getting started.
I believe that, too, and I'm so ready to get started. Good. I've been preparing for this for so long. At 30 years, I talked to my grandfather about, I had my 30 years of authenticity training to prepare this. I am so ready and just excited, thrilled, and biting at the bit. Let's go.
It's on. Okay, everybody, thank you so much for listening. And Norma, thank you for being with us this evening. I've so enjoyed this interview. And again, it's normahollis.com. Please do yourself a favor. It's a real treat to go to her website. You can hear her give a talk, which is really great. And again, it's normahollis.com. And remember, everybody, the last six letters of attraction are action. So get busy living the life that you came here to live. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Good night.